The future of immigration reform may be in serious doubt following House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's surprising primary defeat on Tuesday. As we move along on the campaign trail, we check in with the state of Virginia and the state of immigration reform. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What's your reaction to Eric Cantor's defeat? What does it say about the strength of the Tea Party in the election this year? You can weigh in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. My guest this half hour is Stephen Farnsworth. He's a professor of political science and international affairs and director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
So what message or messages were sent by Eric Cantor's defeat?
Well, the main consequence of this defeat for the country is absolutely a growing sense of fear among Republican incumbents. There had been a lot of thought going into the 2014 election that the Tea Party was really past its prime, that the influence that it had in 2010 especially would be less significant this time around. But what we saw on Tuesday was a very, very prominent, very capable fundraiser being defeated by somebody that almost nobody had ever heard of. And so other Republicans around the country are going to look at this and say they could be next. And so any incentive, any temptation by Republicans to compromise on immigration or a long-term budget deal, anything like that, I think, is really not very likely. Politicians are very, very worried about the Tea Party now in a way that they weren't even a week ago.
And did you guys see this coming out there in Virginia? Was this something that was at all a surprise to you, or at least as surprising as it seems to be to the rest of the country?
Well, it really was a surprise to everyone. I thought that this would be a much closer race than his previous primary contest. He won by more than 2-1 two years ago when he went into the Republican primary. But Brad really didn't seem like somebody who was really generating all that much interest. He was making a lot of mistakes. He, for example, had really not tried to approach national figures, even within the Tea Party movement, all that aggressively. He really had very much a grassroots focus. He wasn't raising a lot of money. His website was not particularly sophisticated. He didn't do a lot of campaign appearances. What this was really was a vote against Cantor, not a vote for Bratt as much as anything else. And so so one of the reasons why I think Bratt came out of nowhere in so many people's minds is because normally in politics, you can't beat somebody with nobody. But in this case, it did happen.
Let's dig into that a little bit. Why was this a vote against Eric Cantor? What did people want to see? Why did they want him out of the seat?
Well, it's important to remember, of course, in Virginia, as in many states, when you have a primary election, you really have a very limited participation. About the most conservative 10-15% of the electorate will participate in a Republican primary. And those are people who are very, very angry. This district was gerrymandered to draw in a very Republican member of Congress. And so whoever wins the primary is tantamount to winning the election in this district. And so what you see here is a very Republican district that, you know, in a primary is going to bring very conservative people to the table. The main thing, I think, that issue-wise that got Cantor in trouble was immigration. Cantor had been willing to be involved with the effort of the so-called American Dream Act, which involves people who came over as children into the United States without proper documentation to have a path to citizenship. That's one of the ways that the Republican Party, at least some Republicans, are trying to imagine doing better with Latino voters in the future. But that was something that really generated a lot of hostility in the district. Another issue is Cantor's focus on Washington. Sometimes party leaders end up focusing on national concerns, not local concerns, and that can get them into trouble. Tom Daschle was not reelected as Senate Majority Leader back in 2000, back in the Bush years. And before that, Tom Foley had been Speaker of the House. He was out of Washington State, and he suffered a painful defeat in 1994, the day that the Newt Gingrich and the Republicans took over Congress. So this is not the first time this has happened. I think Cantor lost sight of the district. I think there was the immigration issue. And Bratt was very effective in connecting with that kind of anger. Not so much a vote for Brad, but clearly a vote against Cantor. It's sort of tough to be representing an anti-establishment party when you are the establishment, and I think that's Cantor's, you know, one of Cantor's big challenges in this election. It was very tough for him to deal with the anti-government move while being an incumbent elected official.
So, given the district that you just outlined, does that pretty much guarantee that Dave Brett will win the seat in the general election, or? Given that he wasn't it wasn't a vote for Brett so much as a vote against Cantor, what does that mean for the Democrat that would be running against Brett in the general election?
Well, the Democrat is unlikely to do well, regardless of who the Republican nominee is. This district is drawn in such a way that the candidates from the Republican Party are in the best position to win. This is a district that Obama was not able to win in this election. And it wasn't even close. It's a 60% Republican district. And so you're looking at a situation where even though this particular Republican, Pratt, isn't very well known, he now has the backing of the National Party. A lot of Republicans in Virginia are lining up behind him. And so it's pretty clear that the Republican establishment, although backing Cantor in the past, has shifted its loyalties very quickly in the last 24 hours to Pratt. Mm.
A listener on Facebook says that there wasn't any chance of immigration reform passing before Cantor lost. Would you agree with that? What was the outlook for immigration reform at that point?
I think that's true. I think one of the things that it's important to remember when you think about the anger of the Tea Party movement, of the anti-establishment movement, is that it doesn't necessarily tie itself to practical calculations about what's going to happen or what's not going to happen. It's more about expressing anger than legislating explicitly. There were 50 attempts, as you know, to try to reverse the Obama health care law. None of that was going to go through the Senate, but they voted over and over again in the House to do that, to keep the more conservative elements of the party happy. I agree with your poster that there wouldn't be any aspect of immigration reform that was likely to pass in this Congress. It's even, of course, less likely now. But because Cantor backed it, there was some anger at that. There was also, although I think this was a less significant issue than immigration, there was also the issue that that Cantor was willing to let the government reopen. You may recall 6 months or so ago, we had those shutdown wars in Congress. And Cantor, as part of the leadership, had gone along with a plan to allow the government to reopen after a few days. And that was something that also generated a lot of Tea Party hostility. They wanted the government shut down much longer. They want Obamacare defeated, and they didn't see Cantor as sufficiently conservative, sufficiently respectable from the point of view of Tea Party issues to get there. And in a way, it's kind of ironic. If you look at Cantor's approval scores among, you know, key votes for issues of concern to a lot of conservative causes like heritage and other places, he has a very high conservative score. He's 95% of the time voting with other Republicans. But those occasional, relatively modest differences with Republicans were enough to generate this sense that Cantor really wasn't one of us. And that's why the conservatives really had turned on him.
We're talking with Stephen Farnsworth. He's a professor of political science and international affairs and director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We're talking about Eric Cantor's defeat Tuesday night to Tea Party Republican Dave Brett. What are your thoughts and your questions about that? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're on the campaign trail this hour, and right now we're talking with Stephen Farnsworth, a professor of political science and international affairs. He's also director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@WPR.org. If you're signed into Twitter, you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Professor Farnsworth, who do you predict would be the next majority leader in the House now that Eric Cantor is out?
Well, I think this is going to be one of the biggest fights for the Republicans going forward. I mean, although we've been talking a lot about how the Cantor defeat is bad news for compromise, and that's bad news, of course, for a Democratic president, it's also created a real problem within the Republican Party because a lot of people want to move up. The thought had been that Cantor was going to be Speaker of the House in another term, maybe even in January next year, because of John Boehner's likely retirement. And so there's a great deal of interest in replacing him. The number three person in the Republican leadership, Congressman McCarthy of California, is clearly going to try to get that spot. But there's a great deal of concern among rank-and-file Republicans that the leadership team is not conservative enough. Boehner occasionally had tried to make deals with Obama, and Cantor and McCarthy had tried to reach out to some of the Tea Party folks, but a lot of the Tea Party folks didn't feel like they were getting enough attention within the leadership. There's Congressman Hensarling of Texas is a more conservative Republican, and he's likely to run for this position. And I think it's going to lay bare some of the differences within the Republican Party about how much to be the party of no and how much to be the party of trying to come up with compromises and come up with some legislative accomplishments. This is going to be a very difficult fight over the next week. The vote is scheduled for the 19th. Within the Republican caucus to figure out who's going to replace Cantor. And over the next week, you're going to see a lot of politicking and a lot of difficulty in terms of working some of these issues out. Another candidate who may emerge is Paul Ryan. I think that that one of the things that Paul Ryan has going for him is that he does have although he says he's not interested at the mm-hmm. moment, he may be a viable compromise choice because you're looking at a situation where there are a lot of people opposed to a really conservative choice for majority leader, and then there are a lot of people opposed to a choice of a more establishment candidate as well. So it's going to the party is going to have to find a way to either paper over these differences, or they're going to really be in a tough spot going forward with this division within the party.
Why is it important who the majority leader is? And could you maybe draw a comparison and contrast or describe the job duties between being the majority leader and the Speaker of the House?
Well, what you have within these positions is a great deal of control over the legislation in terms of the shape that it takes as well as when it's discussed. So much about politics is about being able to control the rules by which decisions are made. And so, for example, one of the big things that occurs for every piece of legislation going through Congress is a debate over what exactly will be permitted in terms of amendments, will there be, and how long the debate can last. So when you're thinking about, for example, immigration reform or health care, you know, how many amendments will be permitted, how long the debate can last, that can have a very significant effect with respect to the shape of eventual legislation. And what you see with a lot of the legislation in this presidential term that during the Obama years and the years of Republican control is what's called a closed rule. And so it's very hard for the minority party to put forward very many amendments, if any amendments, on some pieces of legislation. That's a big problem for Democrats, to be sure, but it's also a problem for Republicans who are more conservative and who feel like some of the ways that they want to move the legislation or shape the legislation by way of amendment in a more conservative direction, that those preferences haven't gotten enough respect from the leadership. So now the politicians at the top level, the whip, the majority leader, the speaker, they work together to try to come up with a compromise, an acceptable plan to the three of them, because they have to basically sell the rules as well as selling the underlying administration party caucus policies. And so it's a situation that really has a lot of control associated with it for the shape of final legislation. And this is why I think the conservative Republican caucus will try very hard to come up with an alternative for McCarthy, because they really don't feel like they've gotten a lot of what they've wanted.
Let's take a call from Craig in Gays Mills. Hi, Craig. What's your question?
Yeah, would the professor compare and contrast the recent defeat of the longtime incumbent Ralph Hall in Northeast Texas?
Sure. I think one of the things to remember when you're talking about congressional elections as opposed to Senate elections is the extent to which so much of this depends on the differences in the individual districts. For the Tea Party, many of the Senate nominees that they've put forward within Republican primaries have been defeated. If you, in general elections, if you think about Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Engel and Todd Akin, Richard Murdoch, there have been a whole series, if you will, of very conservative challengers who have been able to win primaries and lose general elections. In the case of both Cantor's district and Hall's district, we're talking about very, very Republican districts, and so the Tea Party impact is not going to be nearly as destructive for the ultimate fortunes of the Republicans in these congressional districts that it was in so many Senate districts. In the case of the Congressman Hall you mentioned, this had been a long-time representative from Texas who also lost to a more conservative challenger. These challenges are often not towards more moderate or liberal Republicans in the Northeastern or Midwestern tradition. You're looking at pretty conservative Republicans to start with being defeated by more conservative Republicans. But there is a temptation, a common feeling, particularly among those anti-establishment voters that would be sympathetic to the Tea Party, that people shouldn't be in office too long. There's a thought that there should be term limits. And so sometimes when you have these long-serving lawmakers running for re-election over and over again, there's a sense that maybe they are past their prime in terms of their ability to connect with the district. They might have gotten, quote-unquote, too big for their britches, if you will. And that creates a real problem for them to connect with the district. And in the case of Ralph Hall and in the case of Eric Cantor, it was the same basic problem. The question was, were they conservative enough, and then were they connected to the district enough? And, when you think about the anger that is out there in the country, that is powering the Tea Party move, that is powering so much opposition to President Obama, it's important to remember that although that may be not widespread among more moderate voters, among the voters who decide a general election, it's a very powerful movement within the Republican primary voting electorate. And that's where they can have their greatest impact. And Cantor and Hall are perfect examples of how being pretty conservative, being really quite conservative by national standards, doesn't mean being conservative enough within these very conservative gerrymandered districts.
We've got a question now from Ross in Milwaukee. Hi, Ross.
Hello. David Brad was able to win the election without a whole lot of money and a lot more door knocking and grassroots. Do you think that other Republicans will be able to use this David Brat model nationally to win elections opposed to using a lot of money?
Well, I think that Cantor is a special case because he is part of the Republican leadership. I think that, the anti-establishment message that the Tea Party movement puts forward is really most effective when you're talking about a lawmaker who is already part of the party leadership, a party leadership, by the way, that the Tea Party felt has not been generally all that connected to what many of the conservative grassroots activists want. I mean, what really makes a big difference for Brat is the support that he received on conservative talk radio. That was Laura Ingraham in particular was really, really inclined to talk a lot about him. He'd been on the show. She campaigned with him in a couple of stops. And so there is this opportunity out there that I think was particularly ripe in Cantor's case because of this leadership question. I think that this can work in other places, but I think we really are talking about the high watermark when we're talking about a Republican member of the party leadership. That's when the anti-establishment message is particularly powerful, particularly effective. People have tried this in other places. John Boehner faced a Tea Party challenger a few weeks back, and he didn't. The challenger didn't get very far against the speaker. It may be that the configuration of the district in Virginia, I think, was particularly hospitable to this Tea Party challenge. These are some of the more conservative counties in the state that are in this congressional district, and it creates a really ripe environment. And quite frankly, Cantor could have done more to work the district. I think sometimes the members of the leadership are cross-pressured. They spend too much time in Washington, too much time thinking about, courting national donors. In fact, on election day itself, Cantor only spent about half the day in the district. He spent the morning in Washington meeting with high-tech executives to try to generate cash for the midterm election for the Republicans. That's one of the things you have to do when you're majority leader. But it's also one of the ways in which you can show yourself as not being as connected to the district as a lot of voters want. So I do think that, you know, there is some lesson here, but there is a limit to how far I think that the Cantor message can be, Cantor defeat can be repeated in other districts.
Well, in our last minute here, the elections are still about 5 months away, but how would you say the control of the Congress is looking in your mind? Which party might take control of the House and the Senate when all this campaigning is over?
Well, I think it's quite clear that the Republicans are really in a great position for retaining their majority in the House. This situation is yet another example of, you know, how the conservatives can feel more engaged in what the Republican Party is up to, and that will mean that their turnout numbers are likely to be high. There's a lot of frustration with Obama, as there is with any president in year six of an eight-year run, and that's going to discourage Democratic turnout. The Senate, though, I think is a difficult question. The more that you see high-visibility conservative voices out there, that can be a real problem in some of the swing states. There is, for example, in Virginia, a key Senate race that may very well be changing its dynamics because of the election of a Tea Party candidate. That may hurt the Republican who's tried to present himself as a more moderate, less combative voice.
Professor Farnsworth, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Stephen Farnsworth is professor of political science and international affairs and director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at University of Mary Washington. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing the hour, Robin Cherry and Christy Taylor for on-air production and direction. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.